Welcome, everyone. This is Daisha from the Science Media Center. I'd like to welcome you to our briefing on innovation in New Zealand. I'd like to introduce our panelists, our panel of speakers. We have three panelists this morning. The first will be Dr. Les Oxley, the second, Dr. Sean Hendy, and the third, Dr. Simona Fabrizi. Dr. Les Oxley is a professor of economics at the University of Canterbury. He also has positions as adjunct professor at both Curtin University of Technology in Perth and Chiang Mai University in Thailand. He's attached to the BRCSS, the BRICS Network. That's a social science network of researchers in New Zealand and an affiliate of MOTU in Wellington. And his research interests include measuring the effects of innovation on the New Zealand economy, so that will be part of what he'll be discussing for us today. He'll be giving an overview of some of the data that will be coming out in the Stats New Zealand report tomorrow, a discussion of how that data has been collected and what we can draw from it, and leading on to some bigger bigger points as far how for innovation in New Zealand, what implications there are. Our second speaker will be Dr. Sean Hendy. He's Deputy Director of the McDiarmid Institute and also has positions at Industrial Research Limited and Victoria University of Wellington. Dr. Sean Hendy will be here primarily flowing on from some of the work he's been doing on his blog on cyblogs.co.nz, which is an initiative of the Science Media Center. His blog is entitled A Measure of Science, and he posts quite a bit on the topic of innovation and also does quite a bit of analysis in terms of intellectual property and other aspects of innovation in New Zealand. So we look forward to that part of his presentation. And our third speaker will be Dr. Simona Fabrizi, who's a senior lecturer in economics at Massey University. She is currently working on a Fast Start Marsden grant that is examining issues of venture capital, innovation, and intellectual property rights. So she'll be our third speaker today. And with that, a couple of housekeeping notes. I'd like you to hold your questions, please, to the end. I'll be muting all the participants who are not presenting during the presentation part, and I'll unmute everybody at the end. If you'd like to raise your hand, as it were, you can do so in the chat box in the upper left hand. Just type your name and that you have a question, and I'll call on you at the end when I open it up for Q&A. Thanks very much, and I will hand now to Dr. Les Oxley.
Thank you, Daisy. Putting the first slide up here. So I'm going to try and give you a quite a high-level introduction to some issues on innovation. My interest in this area is in relation to trying to measure some of the drivers of innovation in New Zealand firms. And in a couple of slides on, you'll see me refer to something called the Business Operations Survey, which is the sort of data that I've been looking at recently. So I think I'll start off the discussion by reminding some people of the nature of at what this level what we typically mean by innovation. And there have been some changes recently in what the OECD regards as innovation, which I think is quite an important change in emphasis, particularly when it comes to policy issues. In the past, there was much more of an emphasis on blue skies type measures of innovation, and that was reflected in something called the Frascati manual. The newer version of that includes the definitions of innovation comes from this thing on the screen called the Oslo manual, and the Oslo manual makes it somewhat clearer what the OECD regards as innovation. And this is particularly what those in my area of economics see as the measure of innovation. And it goes beyond what was the older version of new products, particularly things coming out of patentable ideas, to include new innovative processes, and innovative marketing methods. And this broadens the concept of innovation in some quite important ways. So it includes both technological and non-technological innovations to reflect the idea that we've got a much broader and wider scope to definitions of innovation. But the particular things I want to emphasize in relation to New Zealand are that our size of firm and our geographic location make international comparisons of innovative activity in New Zealand fraught with considerable problems. It's very hard to compare New Zealand with like countries to say that we are low on the innovation scale or high on the innovation scale. And what I have on screen now is a 2008 measure of New Zealand gross expenditure on R&D, where, as many of you are probably aware, we rank very low in international OECD comparisons in the amount of expenditure as a component of GDP that we spend on R&D. So we appear not to be spending very much of our national product on R&D, and I think there are some good reasons why we see that. They're good in as much as they are explainable. They're not necessarily good in relation to what that means for New Zealand economic activity. And one of the issues that I'll come to shortly is the fact that we have some very, very small New Zealand firms, and the majority of our firms are very small. The work that I've been looking at is based upon a Statistics New Zealand survey, a survey that's issued every 2 years called the Business Operations Survey. And this survey, as the slide shows you here, has been conducted since 2005. The 2009 version is currently being cleaned and made ready for a very select group of people to investigate. It's very, very good as a survey in that it has a large sample size. It has a high response rate because it's administered by Stats New Zealand. Its disadvantages are that it only surveys businesses, firms, which have more than six employees. And as we'll see on the next slide, this is cuts out a large number of firms. What you can see from that slide in relation to some of the 2009 survey results that are coming out so far are that 46% of businesses engaged in some form of innovative activity over the last 2 years, remembering that this is based upon the OECD measure, which includes product, processes, and marketing. 26% of businesses undertook innovation in goods or services. 23% carried out innovation in operational processes. 26% and 25% in organizational management processes and marketing methods. Not surprisingly, ICT and to some extent manufacturing are seen as the most innovative firms as a group. But you can also see from those figures that there's a large proportion of innovation coming from organizational and managerial and marketing methods, which under old definitions wouldn't have been captured at all. Moving on swiftly here. One of the issues that is quite problematic for generating a higher level of innovative activity in any country, but particularly in New Zealand, is that New Zealand has a large number of very small firms. This means that their ability to undertake and finance R&D is somewhat limited. So as of February 2008, we had 97% of enterprises employing fewer than 19 people. 19 people, anything more than 19 is regarded as a relatively large company in New Zealand. Small SMEs, small and medium enterprises in New Zealand are defined as enterprises with 19 or fewer employees. And we can see that there are a very large number of very small firms in New Zealand. They don't contribute that proportion of output, but SMEs account for just over 30% of all employees in New Zealand, and that will be quite important for explaining some of the lack of potential innovation and R&D in New Zealand. This differs quite considerably from measures of small and medium enterprises in other jurisdictions, and this makes it very problematic to compare simple measures of small and medium enterprise innovation in New Zealand with small and medium enterprise innovation in Europe or in the US. In the European Commission, a medium-sized enterprise is defined as firms with fewer than 250 annual work units. They're equivalent to workers, effectively. And an annual turnover of less than 50 million euro. In the US, a small business size is standard for 75% of manufacturing industries is 500 employees. These are enormous companies by New Zealand standards, and they're regarded as small to medium elsewhere. So we have to be very careful when we're comparing results from other countries and comparing ourselves with other countries. And the last slide I've got here is a set of policy implications, some more provocative than others. But these are things that are, I believe, things that we should be starting to think a little more carefully about. I think, and a number of other economists working in this area regard the current innovation strategy in New Zealand as being particularly favourably inclined or potentially biased towards the idea of blue sky research. The innovation opportunities in New Zealand go much broader than simple blue skies-based innovation. And looking at the information coming out of the new proposed ministry, it does have a very, very strong bias towards or focus on CRIs with an almost total exclusion to inputs from the universities. From the university perspective, and this is not just my own university, but many other universities seem to be spending a lot of time and effort putting policies in place to protect property, but actually are not developing policies about creating it. And just moving swiftly through these lists, which you can read yourself, attempts to just get overseas innovation policies in place in New Zealand have to reflect some of the unique geographic or scale of New Zealand enterprises. You can't just simply pick up Finland, pick up Ireland, and pick up their policies and fit them into New Zealand and think they're going to work. And lastly, this size does matter here. The small scale of New Zealand firms mean that they are not undertaking traditional R&D because they're far too small to finance that. And the size of the New Zealand market inhibits the domestic production development. Good ideas quickly get taken overseas where they can have a much larger market to develop that potential. So innovation could start here, but the new products are typically being taken overseas where the markets are much bigger. Stacey, I'll finish with that one, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Les. I'll hand over to Sean Hendy. Please hold questions to the end. I've muted participants to minimize noise on the line. I'll open it up for Q&A once we're finished. Thanks. Go ahead, Sean.
Okay. Thanks, Dasha. Yeah, my first slide, I'm entitled my brief presentation, Innovation at Scale, and some of the things I'm going to say are going to resonate quite strongly with Les's comment. I'm a theoretical physicist. I'm not a professional economist, so I take quite a different perspective on these things. My first slide just kind of illustrates some of the things that I've been interested in. I've been interested in data mining to see what sort of, you know, what ways can I look at innovation that perhaps are a little bit different. On the first slide, I've actually analysed Nokia. So Les brought up Finland, and of course Nokia, if you look at the contribution to GDP of Nokia to Finland, that's actually pretty much the difference between New Zealand's GDP and Finland's GDP. So it's of interest to actually look at what it would take to sort of generate a Nokia size impact on our GDP. The diagram on the left, which I'll highlight here, this is a co-patenting diagram. So every red dot is an inventor in an OECD patent database, and the lines connecting them, they're connecting those individuals because they've filed a patent together. And this collection of individuals, there's about 1,300 of them, show up in the Nokia patent database. And the plot on the left shows how new inventors were added to that connection of people working at Nokia every year. And you can see that in 2002, almost 350 new inventors appeared in Nokia, and I've plotted the corresponding rise in PhD graduates in engineering in Finland. And you can see, you know, 350 new entrants into that Nokia diagram just in the Helsinki area is quite a substantial impact on, in Finland. So just moving on to my next slide, I just want to let me clear that. I just want to perhaps put this in context. You know, why are people interested in measuring science? Well, you know, in many countries it's taken as a given that, that science and innovation are important for prosperity and for the economy. And, you know, my first quote there is a recent comes from a recent address by President Barack Obama. You know, science is more essential for our prosperity than ever before. However, when you look at what evidence there is for that, it's actually, you know, you can see it's actually a difficult question to address quantitatively. The direct evidence for benefit, particularly publicly funded science, is actually quite sketchy, and it's really because it's difficult. Most of the benefits from public science are from spillovers, so they don't directly accrue to the people doing the research. It comes through greater good to the public, and so it's actually, you know, very difficult to measure the benefits of investing in scientific research. And you know, there are studies out there. But, you know, there's really a lot of problems with some of the studies that have been done. There's a plot that I've taken from a very recent Nature article that shows that some of the annual rates of return on investment, and this is particularly in agriculture, you know, are very high. But I think there's a number of problems with these studies. They tend to be rather small, and you know, and they are very focused on agriculture and very focused on what's happened in the United States. So there's a lot more work that really needs to be done in this area. Here's just a summary of some of the things we've done with our data mining. In particular, we've looked at patents and scientific publications that are coming out of New Zealand, and I showed you the example of the Nokia patent footprint. And we're really looking to try and understand how New Zealand fares in innovation. So one of the key things, and Les talked about this and discussed some of the reasons why, New Zealand businesses spend very little on research and development, and I think that has a big impact on in particular our patenting activity. And I'll show you a diagram on the next in a minute showing how, you know, where we fall on the patent rankings. I'll also show you some data that shows that there doesn't seem to be any particular bottleneck in patenting, right? We seem to be just as good at turning small ideas into big ideas as our counterparts in the United States or Finland. But rather, it really does reflect that it's our lack of scale, and this might be business size, but also population and city size, and our lack of investment that are our problem, rather than any particular quick fixes that come about from identifying bottlenecks. So just one thing I'd like to discuss. Les talked about this bias, perhaps, towards blue skies research. When you look at what we publish, what scientists in New Zealand are actually publishing, in fact, you know, really, there's a bias towards agriculture and environmental science. So what I've done, I've got some pie charts here on the left, it shows the distribution of world publications. And, in fact, the big difference between New Zealand and the world is that worldwide about 35% of scientific publications are in physical sciences and engineering, whereas in New Zealand that's about 17%. Worldwide, 13% of publications are in plant, animal, agricultural, and environmental science, whereas in New Zealand that's 33%. So, you know, there's a strong bias towards what you might call our traditional economy. And there is cause to be concerned about the way our science system is functioning. Down in the bottom part of the slide, I've got another pie chart that shows the number of New Zealand PhD graduates that are coming out of our universities, and in fact only 4% of our PhD graduates are in our traditional areas of our traditional economy and agricultural science, and that number is declining, if anything. So there are some concerns as to the skill sets that exist in our science system at the moment. So my next slide just puts us. This is a very similar plot, in fact, to the one Les showed. Les's plot was our percentage of GDP that we were spending. Here's our patenting rate per million people. And in particular, here's New Zealand, and you can see we're quite a way below the OECD average. You know, a country we might like to compare ourselves to, you can get yourself into trouble for doing this, is Australia, and we're about 40% lower in patenting rates to Australia. So that just shows you where we sit on the innovation scale. Why is that? Well, one interesting thing is to not compare us at a national level, but to actually compare our cities. So let's, for example, compare Auckland to Adelaide in terms of number of patents per person. And here I've got another plot where on the left, where I am just doing that. I'm plotting the population size versus the number of patent applications. And you can see that, in fact, Auckland and Adelaide are actually very similar in number of patents per person. The dashed lines there show how the data would be distributed if patenting rates were uniform across different cities. So if people in Ikitahuna were filing patents at the same rate as people in Sydney, then all the data would sit on those dashed lines. However, you can see that the slope of the data is higher than just that uniform rate, and that means that, in fact, it's the big cities that are generating the high patenting rates. So the reason for the difference between Australia and New Zealand in patenting rates is Melbourne and Sydney. It's those big cities. And I think actually, you know, one explanation for that is the business size. And so I think, you know, probably this is telling us something about the size of businesses that you know, exist in cities of certain sizes. It's also interesting that larger cities are more collaborative. So the diagram on the on the right, this sort of funny spidery spider web thing, this is actually the co-authorship diagram for 2009 from Auckland. These are from all the scientists in Auckland, and these are the scientific publications that they've published last year. And again, each dot is a scientist, and then the lines connecting the dots the represent some collaboration through publications. And then the plot down below it actually shows how the largest connected network. So you can see in that Auckland diagram, in the centre there's a big network of researchers in the centre there, and in fact that network of researchers represents about 70% of the science done in Auckland. And again, this increases as you go to bigger cities. So the bigger the city, the more collaboration that goes on. Okay, so I just want to show you one more set of data. So again, what I've done is I've looked at the number of patent applications in a slightly different way. I've looked at how those patent applications are distributed amongst companies. The plot on the left it shows the number of companies with a particular number of patents. So, for example, down here this represents 10 patents. So New Zealand has about 10 companies that have 10 patents. And the really interesting thing is that the slopes of these curves are almost the same, whether you're in the United States or in New Zealand. And that's suggesting that we're turning small ideas into big ideas at the same rate as the Americans or the Finns or the Australians. Interestingly, if you scale these curves by the amount of money being spent by businesses on R&D, they almost collapse onto each other. So on the right hand side, you can see that the data all fall pretty much on the same curve, and that's because I've scaled the number of patents by the number of dollars spent by businesses. So in fact, you know, if anything, New Zealand's slightly above other countries. So it actually does show that we get pretty good value for the number of patents for, per dollar spent in New Zealand. And nonetheless, it's we just as good at turning these small ideas into big ideas, but we're not having enough small ideas. That's what I draw from that data. So finally, just to finish off, I'll just summarise a few points. So one of the interesting things is that big cities drive innovative activity. You know, why might that be? Well, Les has framed it in terms of business size, but I think my argument here is essentially equivalent. Really, I think innovation and knowledge generation, it's the people working in that area, they're becoming increasingly specialised. Although we talk about the world becoming flat and people being able to work from anywhere, you know, when you have this high degrees of specialisation, people really need to collaborate to have an impact. And so it's this, you know, it's larger cities enabling these larger collaborations or teams of researchers that can make progress. You know, how do we deal with this? Well, one of the things that we think about at the MacDiarmid Institute is we really need to think and act like a city of 4 million people. In fact, if we, you know, if New Zealand had the patenting rate equivalent to Sydney, you know, we'd be filing more patents than per capita than the Australians. And so I think we need to look at putting together multidisciplinary, multi-institutional collaborative research networks, whether they're in business or in academia. And finally, we need to find ways to encourage business R&D. I mean, it's clear that the amount of money you spend on R&D controls that patenting level of patenting. So finding ways to improve that will lift our rates of patenting. And I think also my first slide where I looked at Finland, we need to ensure that that their education system was able to respond very, very quickly to an opportunity to develop Nokia. And we need to look to ways, you know, in which our education system and innovation system could respond as quickly.
Thank you very much, Sean.